And we're live with our 296th episode of Absolute Absent. I'm Ken Johnson at CK Tricky on social media, joined by my co-hosts, Seth Law at Seth Law on social media. Seth, say hi.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode. That's about how today's going, right? If you are watching live, we're running a little bit behind because life, I think, is the main thing, right? Long holiday weekend and then getting back into just the general flow of things. But we are excited to be back as always. This is episode 296. We've got a few things that I did want to talk through before we talk about NX and the breach slash exploit slash vulnerability that is NX. And there's a lot of FUD about it. So anyway, we'll get into that shortly. First things first, it looks like we are going to be offering up a version of harnessing LLMs for application security in October. If you are interested, I know we've got a couple of people that have reached out via DM. If you are further interested in that, please reach out and we will get the dates up and live sometime this week, right? We'll figure out exactly when that's going to happen. That one's going to be great. We always have a good time with the Harnessing LLMs course, and it has evolved over time, obviously, because there is a ton that goes into actually instrumenting LLMs, and we're finding out more and more every single day. So look for that. On top of that, if you are attending Black Hat Europe and looking for training, we will be offering a combined version of harnessing LLMs and practical secure code review that is called Next Level, I believe it is. Next Level practical or Next Level code review, I think is the official name on the course. But this is all things LLMs, application security, secure code review, how you would implement a workflow that would utilize those things to implement a secure code review methodology, which is, as we know, one of the baseline targets or baseline activities that we perform as application security individuals and engineers, right? So as much as I harp on Crocs and socks, right? Like I think the new one is this will be our Crocs and socks and bots course, right? Like how you utilize bots to perform Crocs and socks and to enhance your own abilities to perform these sorts of activities. So we would love to see you there. Again, this one's targeted at Black Hat EU and the, you know, Europe region, I guess. Besides that, there's a couple of upcoming conferences that I'll be at. I'll let Ken speak to his schedule here shortly. I'm going to be at, or Redpoint in general is going to be at B-Sides Cache Valley, which is a small local conference here in Utah. It's run by the B-Sides Salt Lake City crew, but we will be there to talk code review, assessments, and LLMs, whatever else you would like to discuss. In addition to that, I will be helping run the AppSec community at SaintCon. So that's October, I want to say 21st through 24th, something like that. Later in October, that'll be a good time. AppSec community at SaintCon is focused on code, just in general. It's not a, there's a little bit of dynamic activity that goes into it, but it's mostly like finding and fixing bugs in code. So interesting to talk to a lot of developers and students that are there. Yeah, I think that's everything that's on my docket right now. Ken, what do you have upcoming? You know, besides the BJJ stuff, right? Like, you know.
Oh, yeah. Just came back from that. So yeah, I got back from Vegas yesterday and going to go back there in 2 weeks for ETLS. It's the Enterprise Tech Leadership Summit. Or no, not 2 weeks. 3 weeks. Sorry. So 23rd to 25th in Las Vegas, there's the Enterprise Tech Lead Summit run by Gene Kim. It used to be called DOES, D-O-E-S. You know, it's a bit more of a, it's probably not this crowd's pure, you know, prime demographic. But you know, if you're an executive, then it's for you. So maybe, well, I know we've got executives listeners as well. So anyways, I'll be there. And then I think there's two other ones, but I haven't locked those down. So won't even speak to them. Yeah, So pretty light, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, it is fall, right? Like, especially after we hit DEF CON and like Hacker Summer Camp, things seem to lighten up for a little bit before we dig back in September. I did see an announcement that Cactus Con, they have announced the dates in February. Yeah. So I like, that's one that I traditionally get down to. You do as well. I'm sure we will be going down as well. We've got a good friend that started that, and yeah, we'll be back into, the desert in February. Don't mind going down there for that.
To me, it has like a way better, like similar to ShmooCon circa 2010, 2012. It has that vibe, but like way better, frankly. And also like you can buy tickets like a normal human being. So it's great.
Yeah, it's not as overrun, I guess I should say, as some of the others. Like that's one of the things that I struggle with, even with, like I mentioned, SaintCon. They're already sold out, right? Like they sell out within like 4 or 5 days of opening up for tickets. And that's a couple thousand people that they bring in for that one. So it's a really good conference. There's a lot of good research that goes into it, a lot of good community, but it does sell out very quickly. Cactus Con doesn't seem to do as much of that. That's more B-sides-ish, but it is very technical. It's a good conference and you should go if you've never had the opportunity. And they do things like student tickets are very, very inexpensive for Cactus Con. For professionals, they allow for further, right, like more people to dig in a little bit more or to donate a little bit more, I should say. Sweet. There was one thing before we get into NX that I wanted to mention. There is a very lengthy thread in Slack right now between me, Brian Glass, and a couple other people talking about the OWASP Top 10. If you don't know, Brian Glass is one of the main contributors and data wranglers for the OWASP Top 10, right? And he has been seeking feedback for some of the things that they've been considering for the 2025 version before they release it. It has been very interesting to chat through with him some of the considerations that go into building the top 10 and what they're trying to accomplish with that list. Because I mean, honestly, from a consulting, like an AppSec consulting perspective, the OWASP top 10 has the ability to be either a great resource or something that just we have to deal with. Right. And I think you've seen this over your career as well, Ken. So my shout out here would be to jump into Slack and to get involved. If the OWASP Top 10 is something that you're utilizing on a daily basis or even a weekly, monthly basis to either classify vulnerabilities or to provide recommendations and prioritize security tasks, this is your opportunity to actually get involved. Reach out to Brian, check out OWASPtop10.org. Or just get into Slack and see what he's saying about the data, right? It's rather fascinating to think about the considerations to go into building this list and what this list is actually supposed to be for you, because that's why it's built. Like, yes, people have picked it up. Yes, it gets included in PCI DSS and other standards. Even though it was never meant to be that sort of thing, but they have to take that into consideration as they look at the vulnerabilities and the data that comes in. So I would just encourage you to get involved there, right? Like I want to give a shout out to Brian because I know he put so much blood, sweat, and tears into that process to make it something that is usable for us as a community.
Yeah. And I would add that, people ask us all the time, well, I'm trying to, or maybe I'm pivoting or I'm trying to from a previous career or I'm for whatever reason, I'm trying to get into software security as a field and like things like this, contributing to projects like this, that's no better start. So get involved if you are trying to, obviously experienced people as well. Super valuable there, but if you can help out with some of the wrangling as well, it's a good place to get your feet wet and start networking.
Yep, it really is, right? And it doesn't necessarily take a super technical mind to actually, like, you're not exploiting these vulnerabilities. What you're doing is you're doing data analysis. You're giving your opinion on what's actually important. And I think that's the crucial piece here, right? If you are in a role that isn't necessarily like me, like looking for vulnerabilities, or you, like, we're looking in code for vulnerabilities, we have certain CWEs and things that we are looking for, but those considerations are different than someone coming from a project management perspective or from a product security perspective, like how they actually analyze the vulnerabilities that are being provided to them, either from a third party like me, or just looking through CVEs for what sort of vulnerabilities actually exist, or coming from various automated products. And I think that's where the struggle exists, is there's a lot of contention as to what the vulnerabilities are, how they're actually classified, whether or not the OWASP top 10 should be just singular vulnerabilities and singular CWEs. And then if it is, how do you actually rate something inside of that? Yeah, I like all of the considerations that go into that and the arguments. I really want to have Brian back on the podcast, probably even before the OWASP top 10 is released, just to talk through and give some, like, shine a light into the process for people. Because it's not happening in a vacuum. And there's people out there that are working really hard to make it something that is useful to the wider community.
Yeah, there are. And, you know, I think, like, just contribute data if you can. Like, I would like to see if there's some way even I could help out there. Because, I mean, obviously, I have a lot of data that I could anonymize as well. So, Brian, if you're listening, and even if you're not, I'll try to remember to reach out and see what we can do. And I would encourage, more organizations to also do this. Like, right? I mean, it's cute and all to say, like, OWASP top 10 is this, whatever, and, like, we're doing our own one or whatever. Cute. But, like, OWASP is the global org, and I have my bones with them. That's fine. But I do recognize that they are a global org and that the OWASP top 10 is a, let's be honest, it's a pivotal part of our community. However you feel about that, that is the reality of where it's at right now. So anyways, I guess what I'm trying to say is there's another angle to this, which is, like, if you have the ability to contribute data, I'm sure that Brian would really, really love that, as if, you know, anonymized and all that fun stuff. But anyways, yeah, cool stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I recognize, like, Brian's work. Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, everybody's doing.
Yeah, because he gets, and I think some of our complaints about to OWASP over the years, right, like, don't necessarily apply to the technical project leads, right, that are trying to accomplish various tasks, get products out, provide value. Some of it is just overall,
or like, typically a single individual, right? It's just overall.
No. Yeah, it's kind of just how the organization has grown up and what the structure looks like, and how some things are done in a vacuum, but the OWASP top 10 project is not one of those. So shout out to those guys. I know they're in the data analysis phase right now, but they probably would take additional data, to your point, right? Just trying to make things better for everyone.
And Brian, next time, hit me up. I can give you anonymized data, I'm sure. Yeah, I don't know. I actually don't know that, but I'm sure that, like, if we could figure out some stats that it would be completely untied to anybody, we could provide, that would be valuable. All right, Cool. I'll move on from that. Just thought that was a good call out.
Yeah.
Lots of opportunities.
Yep. And again, it kind of goes back to that Crocs and socks, right? Like, you know, yes, Ken and I have talked a lot about AI and generative AI over the last year, but the Crocs and socks don't change, right? It doesn't feel like the basics of what we're trying to do on a daily basis have changed that much. And I think that feeds into this article specifically, Ken, and this breach that's happened over the last week, 2 weeks, right? I can't remember when Annex actually exploited.
But I don't know, because I saw it while I was on vacation last week, and I didn't have a chance last week, obviously, or desire even to dig in on any of it, but I saw, that's when I saw it. So I don't know how long, we could go back and look at the dates, but.
Yeah. Well, there's that good breakdown, and maybe that's where we go. From, who was that from?
From the Step Wiz Security. Yeah. I felt like Step was more technical, but Wiz's was more like high level.
Okay. Well, we'll start with the Wiz one and then we can dig into the other. Okay. Yeah.
Oh my God. I didn't have comments open. Right. So I had no idea there was these. Good morning. Also did not realize.
Good morning. From Mumbly. Yeah. And Robert Tonic. And Robert. Yeah. Yep. Probably always saying finding vulnerability is hard. Describing vulnerability is harder. Yeah. Some of the details that Brian has shared in that thread are fascinating just from a numbers perspective, right? Things like 25% of CVEs don't actually have a good CWE associated with them, right? That's a massive, massive problem. This goes back to, the other data that Jerry is always talking about from a CVE perspective as well, right? The CNAs that actually report those CVEs don't always do the best job of validating or clarifying or creating metadata because whatever their goals are just different. Anyway, we don't have to get into that. We can have another discussion with both Jerry and Brian about all of that. Looks like August 25th is when things kicked off. The link is up, the Wiz link. And yeah, where do you want to start with this one? Because there's quite a bit that's actually happened there as far as exploitation of a package and code that was pushed to NPM, but then was quickly actually taken down, right?
This diagram, I figure, was like, before we get into the more technical bits, which definitely there are far more technical bits. Can you see this?
Ken got up the diagram from the Wiz article, which is the NX supply chain attacks. And you want to just kind of talk through what's going on here,
can I talk about the thing that bothers me the most about this, which is
sure.
Please capitalize the H if you're going to write GitHub. Oh my God, it drives me fucking nuts. Just why does nobody do this? It's GitHub, G and H are capital. Damn it. Sorry. It drives me nuts. I guess because I worked there so long, I just cannot stand that. Anyways. All right.
That was the Crocs and socks of this. Just completely. That was the full exploitation, was just the fact that the H was not capitalized when it all happened. Yeah. There you go.
Spelling and punctuation matter. All right. Anyways, enough of me being salty about stupid things. Okay, so long story short, someone cuts a PR to this NX repository, which is, a build system repository. It's pretty, So they submit a PR, and this is the interesting thing. We'll actually show the code that Step Security produced and explain this, but in essence, and this is what I want to be clear about. This is not at this point anything to do with AI. Cause like I heard there was AI. So I was like, oh, it's nothing to do with AI here. All it is there's an injection flaw, which will explain how that actually works. But you essentially put some code that you want to execute inside of the PR title. You submit a pull request. Their build system, GitHub Actions, it executed that PR. It's GitHub Actions ran that malicious PR title, which then allowed them to exfiltrate tokens. And then this is where it sort of gets a little more advanced. So then they upload a malicious version of the library to NPM, right? Or they publish, they upload the malicious version of NX package. People download that. Now this is where AI starts to come into play a little bit, right? Okay, I just want to be clear. They download it. They have this malicious code running on their machine. At this point, anything's possible. It's part of a post-install script. You already have RC. Yeah. AI doesn't matter at this point. The only thing that has anything to do with AI here, I just want to be very clear, is that they decided to use, if you had like Claude Code or, you know, I think there was another Gemini Q, whatever, they list three tools. There might be more that they targeted, like Warp or something like that. But long story short, you know, they're using those AI locally installed tools to say, here's my prompt. You know, I'm looking for these kinds of files in these sorts of locations. This is only running, by the way, on Linux and, or excuse me, OS X and Nix machines. So nothing to do with Windows. So they know relatively in their prompt what file locations probably exist. And obviously the LLM's trained on most common places where sensitive things exist. So they say, here's the sensitive stuff I want you to go look for on the user's machine. They also have the option of, there's like three separate flags with the AI tools that you can pass to them that basically say, look, don't worry about any kind of security. I just YOLO, just do, literally one of them was a flag that said YOLO. But anyways, that's where AI comes into play at any point. Like they already had RCE on the machine. They're already going to get what they want. They just used AI to like automate it and make it a little easier, but it doesn't, it's relatively, who cares, right? Like that's not, let's just like take AI out of the picture is my other than, okay, I made things easier.
Yeah. Sorry, well, I think the reason why it gets called out is this is the first time that we've seen AI used as used for data exfiltration and basic like, you know, searches. So traditionally, like you would hard code things in, right? Like, hey, find me these .env files, right? Like maybe you'd have to write a script or some sort of a payload that you would upload. But instead, they're looking for the existence of the AI tools and Claude and other things installed on the desktop and then utilizing that to short circuit uploading of a, you know, a traditional kind of data exfiltration system, right? Or script. So like part of me understands that's why it's getting called out. But I'm with you because it just is not, that's not the exploit.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like, we've been in this world for a long time. It's like, yeah, like you got RC on a machine, man. Like great. You also have some AI tools on the machine that, and, you know, Robert mentioned, hey, but it makes detection harder. I don't know what people are doing inside of their org. If they're like saying, hey, it might be twofold and probably more because I'm not the best, most smart person in detection and response, but I would imagine you probably are saying like, hey, disable these flags if you even have the option of disabling flags or even knew that those flags existed. And if maybe this is now a part of people's security posture, I don't know if you can lock that down, but sure, great. And then I would imagine also on the flip side, you detect for any of these AI calls where that are those CLI call tool, those CLI tools being called with those flags and say like, hey, that's weird. We should check out so-and-so's machine. I'm not an expert, but I would imagine some of these things are pretty simple in terms of how to prevent.
Yeah. And detect. Well, I mean, you've got your typical like CrowdStrike and other like endpoint detection systems that should have some of these protections built into them. Yeah, they are because of false positive CLI tools, especially on dev machines, right? Yeah, Bobby. Yeah, absolutely. Right. Like, and, you know, on top of that, just like getting them, making sure that you have the coverage that's available. I did want to give as well, like the relevant to this discussion, Hong on Slack was asking questions about org level policies regarding generative AI use, right? Like how do you actually implement those policies? How do you check that they're in place? I don't know if we've got a good handle on how Claude and other things are actually being utilized. I mean, back to our discussion at DEF CON with those large FANG organizations, Ken, right? Like if someone is using Claude Desktop or Windsurf, whatever it is, what sort of prompt, what sort of protections are in place for the device in and of itself and what's actually going into that, right? I just don't even know if there's a standard for that yet. So,
yeah, I don't either. And that's why I was like, well, if you could configure those flags to be like flags you cannot include, or alternatively, if you can't get that sophisticated, you're just like, listen, here's our policy internally, and we're going to get notified if you do use those flags. Obviously, there's a lot of like different considerations and factors, everything from org size to just a lot of things, technical stacks internally, budget, whatever, but concern, are you even using AI? A lot of things, a lot of questions, but still at the end of the day, I do feel like if you put out even just a simple policy that said you can't use these for these reasons, and it's going to tell us when you do, and just know that you're going to be like contacted, maybe that would reduce false positives. But just zooming out, like I get that maybe the issue here is that the AI, I'm sure the AI tools make this easier to compromise. I know that. I'm sure they make it harder to detect. At the end of the day, though, I felt like when I was seeing this in my feed, I literally, you sat there with me as I went through all the articles today to figure out, because I was like, is that really the only part of this that's AI? Because so many people kind of highlighted that part, and that's what I figured it was.
Yeah,
exactly. And that's why I was thinking maybe it was like something tied in with the GitHub Actions build system. And that's what they were talking about. It has nothing to do. It's like, literally, dude, you already did everything you want to do. You have RC, like you're just like, now cherry on top, I'm going to make this more efficient for exploitation in a quick way. I guess the last thing that we didn't mention though, Seth, is that they took stolen keys that gave specifically for stolen GitHub tokens. They then flipped people's previously private repositories to public. And yeah, that's exactly.
Yeah.
That's pretty scary. So I guess
I love this point from Bobby before we move on, right? Like I love this point, right? Like the use of AI in malicious payloads probably will increase because non-determinism helps evade detection, right? Like this is where my mind goes as well. Is the ability to interact with Claude code, with any of these AI systems that are running locally on a compromised system, allows you to ask for things in a manner that that gets around traditional patterns, right? So in general, malware detection is based on pattern analysis and has been for years, right? Oh, we see this code come in. It's got a specific signature that's associated with it. But now all we have to do is write a prompt that accomplishes the same thing and probably could even create code for you on the fly that would exfiltrate data to bypass those malware detection systems. I'm sure they are scrambling. In general, you know that the various malware detection vendors have got to be figuring something out
And I mean, I see, like, because Robert's saying about this being very difficult, I believe Robert ever, I mean, like I said, I'm not any expert in detection and response, right? So I believe that, and it's probably harder to detect, yeah. I guess my point, and I understand, like, we all need eyeballs to our articles and stuff. So I was like so confused. But let me pull up this code real quick that explains very succinctly. And thank you, Step Security, for putting this together. Good job on this. All right, let me share the screen. Nope, wrong one. Yep, right one. Okay. Now this should be, let me see, is it zoomed in enough? Let me go look. Pretty well zoomed in. Okay. Here's your PR title. Here's a command it can run. If the command it's going to run is your pull request title, then it's pretty clear to realize like, it's pretty easy to realize like, oh, okay, well, the name is the issue, right? And, or excuse me, I'm saying the name is the issue. The name is problematic at this point. Cause yeah, now you're just like literally able to just run commands arbitrarily. I don't know what else to say. Like, this isn't that complicated. You're just, frankly, I'm a little floored this flaw even existed. Really, because it's this simple. But and I think they say while the team understood the vulnerability, they didn't fully grasp how it would compromise secrets, because their PR title validation workflow didn't have access to secrets. That's fine, but when you can run custom code, obviously, yeah, now you've got something to work with. And they triggered this action when the PR was created. It's also set up so that if it's because like this synchronized is like updating, right? So if you update the PR, like usually when you add new code to the PR, you see synchronized. I don't actually, believe it or not, I don't see a lot of edited. I see a lot of opened and synchronized and reopened with pull requests. Anyways, so when any of these actions happen, then yeah, the pull request that was submitted is going to run. The malicious title inside of the PR is what runs a command to exfiltrate the GitHub token once the GitHub action runs. This is probably one of the most difficult and problematic parts of GitHub actions, is that those tokens are usually in some way accessible, right? Even if ephemerally, even if short-lived, they are accessible, and then they're not always, right? So yeah, that's really the crux here, is that they had a PR, malicious title, ran a command, extract GitHub tokens, pushed up a new package, downloaded that NX package, was downloaded by a bunch of people. I guess the only other thing that I didn't mention yet, I don't think, yeah, you didn't mention either, was there was like another thing that they did, which was kind of more of a jerk move, which is they put into like ZSHRC and BashRC files, they put in like a sudo shutdown -h or now or whatever command, so that, you know, if you're familiar with Linux, like that just shuts the machine down the second a terminal session's open, right? Just
denial of service. Yep.
Yeah, right. That presumably, I guess, to make it harder to maybe like fix this situation as it's ongoing. I don't, you know, or just to be a jerk. Yep. I don't know. That's what they did. And I don't know. I don't know if there's any other relevant details that you wanted to call out here, Seth, in this article. But that, for me, that was the big one. It's just showing like this is plain old AppSec. This has nothing to do with any kind of new stuff. This is just security.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I think my big takeaway on this, again, right, it goes back to kind of the crux and socks of security, right? And AppSec in general, most of the vulnerabilities that we find are the initial step in an attack chain, right? And it usually isn't anything overly complicated or even that clever. It's usually just a simple mistake. Similar to this, that if you had had some sort of system or some sort of person that actually reviewed these before they went out, most likely it would have been caught. But a lot of this just has to, a lot of these sorts of exploits and breaches occur when those sorts of controls aren't in place, right? And the amount of code, the amount of data, the amount of pull requests that are going into a lot of these systems is more than a singular person can handle. So we've got to come up with tools that'll actually alert and prioritize and do other things with this code before it actually gets out the door. And you know, there's ways that we can approach it, right? Like there's AI that we can use. Obviously, we spend a lot of time on this. Like, you know, you've built a whole product around like detecting sort, you know, malicious changes or unpredicted changes, I could say, unintentional changes into the code that introduce these sorts of vulnerabilities. But it's all got to be reviewed at some point, especially any of these sorts of products that are used by thousands or hundreds of thousands of people. Since, you know, yeah, the implications get very, yeah, the implications of these sorts of breaches become more widespread and more impactful over time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. And that's what they call out, actually, is, well, sorry.
Broader, yeah, implications. Yeah.
AI tool weaponization, targeting developer assets, multi-stage exfiltration. And yeah, for sure, I think AI tool weaponization, well, I don't think, I mean, you know, more of a trend. It makes sense. I get it. But yeah, anyway, so I think of what else, like, So they flipped a bunch of repositories to public. They messed with people's machines. They stole some money, presumably. NX is, and then I guess like maybe the only other thing to mention is like, what is NX? Like, if you're not familiar with it, it's easy to think it's NPX. It's not NPX. It's NX. NX is for like mono repo, like primarily anyways, mono repo management, you know, where you have like many different code paths and package files and such. Trying to think what else is relevant here. Cleanup actions seem to happen pretty, I mean, I'll say this, I having worked at GitHub, I can tell you that those folks take this stuff very seriously. They will scour to the end of the earth to figure out how this happened, how to prevent it. They take, I mean, obviously incredibly serious. So I at least feel good in that. It seems like everybody kind of came together. But also, like, one thing to remember too is that Microsoft owns both NPM and GitHub. So it's a pretty tight loop that people can work together to, like, you know, resolve these types of issues. So yeah, benefit of that. I know I don't have like a ton of other stuff on the docket for me to talk about today, Seth. That was like my main thing. So yeah, I don't know what else you want to chat about. Yeah, just to catch people up. Like, we came back from Vegas, and then 2 weeks later, I was back out in Vegas for a week for a thing, and just got back yesterday. And it's like trying to catch up with you know, everything that's been going on in the news, and just work and everything. It's like my Monday, you know, just figuring it all out.
Yeah. I mean, maybe the last thing that we can review, because I don't necessarily want to dig into a another technical article at this point, just given the time constraints that we have today. But it'd be interesting to hear from you, like, where is it that you specifically, and then I'll comment as well, but where do you go for your security news, right? Like your AppSec news, right? Like, what feeds are you monitoring nowadays? I know we've talked a lot about like how Twitter died, right, from that perspective. So what is it? Who do you look to, I guess I should say?
Yeah, well, actually a really great question. Let me pull up, I'll list some of some of the substacks that I read. So one of them is detection engineering, because like I said, I'm not the greatest about, like, you know, I mean, I think I'm always trying to improve. We all should be. So I listen to that, or I read that one. Detection Engineering Weekly Substack. Frankly Speaking is, we've had him on the podcast. I still read his articles and get his articles. And actually, Frankly Speaking, I'm glad you brought this up, because he converted to free. So no longer do you have to pay for reading the articles. They're free. So again, Boring AppSec, I've really started paying a lot more, obviously, because like I was on the podcast and we had on Schumann on, I've been paying a little bit more attention to what they've also been like kind of ramping up their content. Daniel Meisler is always a staple for me. Clint Gibler's always a staple for me. Hacker Newsletter for just general technical things. I also subscribe to Shomik Ghosh on Substack. I forgot about that one. Software Snack. What's the actual name of this? Software Snack.
Yeah.
Software Snack Bites. The last one I would say is that because everybody knows about, I think everybody knows about Clint Gibler's TLDR sec, but there's also just TLDR, which is like the main TLDR set of different newsletters. Like, they've got a web dev one I subscribe to, they've got an AI one, a founders one, an InfoSec one. There's the main TLDR as well. And again, not Clint Gibler, this is something else. And I like all of those different ones for different reasons. Obviously, founders are good for me for like trends and the industry and how financing and funding is going and just different interesting things. AI for obvious reasons, InfoSec for obvious reasons, web dev, because that's my life, is like I'm an engineer. So yeah, I don't know. What about you? What are you catching up on?
Yeah, I mean, I think from a general like technical perspective, right, like a lot of the research articles that do get posted in, I mean, like in the various Reddit subreddits, right, whether it's NetSec, Web Security Research, even some of the language specific ones are fairly interesting to me. The TLDRSec is always a good one. Daniel Meisler is another one, right? Like that's where I get a lot of things. As I dig more into technical things, I really like lobsters, right? They're like, and that is, they do have a security kind of tag that's associated with it, but very, very in-depth articles in general, like on coding standards and digging into, it's kind of my CS, my computer science background. It tickles that portion of my brain with that. There's dev.to as well, but that seems to be more surface level and people that are dropping in there. Oh, Daniel. Yeah, Daniel Hacks is a good one. It does feel like it takes a little bit more time to curate nowadays to find where are at. That's why you do appreciate like Clint and Daniel Meisler and the guys that are trying to pull at least some of this together in general.
Dude, this is why I was getting so annoyed. Yeah. Sorry to take a step back for just a second. This is why I was getting so annoyed a few years ago when everyone's like, yeah, we don't like Twitter, so we'll go here and we'll go there. And I'm like, okay, like, understand. I get where there's always emotions tied to all this stuff and yeah, whatever, political leanings and all that stuff, right? That's what was driving that. But I'm like, people have to zoom out a little bit and realize that once you go off of a platform, everybody has to be bought in, and it's very unlikely that everybody's going to be bought in unless that new platform really nails it. And the first time I saw people go off of it, they went to Mastodon. I was like, yeah, good luck. That's not going to work. It's never going to work. Mm-hmm. It's worked a lot of shit, and I was right. And then now, what was the other one? Blue Sky. Blue Sky is the one. And guess what? I was on there for like a month, 2 months, and then like, I don't know, maybe I could be the problem here, but I don't see a unified community in any one place, including Blue Sky. Mm-hmm. So I sit there and I watch it. It was fun for a second, kind of, but then I had a hard time finding people again. I had curated this over the course of 15 years or whatever it was. Yeah. Probably 15, 16 years. I've curated the people that I talk to and communicate with. And now I'm like, I'm on this other platform, and I'm sure there's like connectors and all this crap that you could maybe maybe there's a way to map all that. I don't know. But the point is that like my whole thing was, I get tempers are high and feelings are high and all that stuff and political stuff and all that, whatever. But you have to realize that we are still a very weird community, and we need a place to go to easily communicate and share technical ideas and thoughts, not your whatever else you want to talk about. It's your feed. You can do what you want. But I'm just talking about from a community perspective. So where are we at now? Well, totally right. Now it's fragmented between a bunch of different Slacks. You have to go to a different bunch of Substacks. You have to go to all these different newsletters. It's
Discord.
A lot of work.
Discord. Yeah.
Much easier when everybody just was in one place. Now, that's not to say I wouldn't love a really great platform to come along social media wise where we can get back to this, but it doesn't exist. And I'm sorry, Blue Sky isn't really delivering on that the same way. So opinions are like a-holes, right? That's mine. Then you just sigh and go back to Slack. Exactly. You just get frustrated.
Yeah. It's like, whatever. Well, and that's really what ends up happening, right? I think, you know, we end up going to the community where people are responding to us, right? So whether that is like our Slack or other Slack communities that we are involved in, does feel like I don't necessarily monitor the X/Twitter feed anymore, right? Decentralized was the future, right? But what's happened, it has become just like niche, right? Like there's feeds that I'm following for certain aspects of application security, certain aspects of security in general, for development efforts or development news, new frameworks, right? Like it becomes very, very difficult to curate, right? So hopefully like our resources are useful to you, and we will get this list together and push it out with the newsletter as well this week. just all these different places that we're currently monitoring, since they are helpful to us when we're looking for articles or we're looking for the latest news that's coming out of the industry in general. Yeah, we're just going to go back to IRC. That's right. Yep.
At the end, which is Slack, but all right.
Yes, it is, basically. Now that you can run all your IRC commands inside of Slack. Yep. That's great.
It'd just be a bunch of AI bots anyways. It'd be like, oh, I'm just optimizing my life through AI agents.
Except I did, you know, we have the free Slack, but like for work, I just did have to pay my like annual like Slack fee, and oof, man, it hurts at times. That's all.
That is why our Slack has 90 the whatever the 90-day free tier limitation, where it just disappears, and then I have to go find out. I think it's 30 days now or something. I don't know. I remember just recently. Like, and thank you, by the way, because I did have a couple people reach out and come back and say, hey, this is the course that I was looking for our online training next month. But that was my issue. Is I kept trying to go back through, and I'm like, oh, people have had made a bunch of requests, and we, you know, they want the virtual thing, and we were doing the in person. Yeah, couldn't find it because that transaction history or that chat history. Anyways, yes, sorry, I'm rambling, but yeah, it's very expensive.
Yeah,
and that's why.
Well, I mean, considering that we have like hundreds of people that are active at any given time, too, it can add up really quick, right?
Oh, actually, can I say something there real quick?
Sure.
Yeah, I just want to put out to anybody who is on Slack, we had our first, that I know of, person comment and whatever. It wasn't a big deal. They were trying to sell something. If you come across somebody trying to sell you stuff in our Slack or whatever it might be that they're trying to do, just hit us up. We'll kick them and no big deal. Okay? Just heads up.
Yep. Yep. Sweet. Well, I think that's everything for today. Appreciate everyone listening. Appreciate all the interactions as usual, Bobby and others on YouTube and in Slack. We will be back next week with another episode. Probably be a little bit more prepared. We're going to be reviewing all of these sources as well. And if you haven't yet, sign up for the newsletter and watch for the course announcement when that's actually going to be.
I will be announcing something, showing, probably demonstrating something next week. That's really cool that I was like, okay, this should be talked about. So anyways.
Sweet.
Yeah.
All right. Teasers from Ken. So, yep.
Yep.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks everyone. And yeah, we'll see you all online.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks everybody.